Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for May the 31st, 2007. I'm Jay Pierce in for Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll be talking over the commodity markets with Dale Durkholz from AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, and later this half hour, the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing. Also, advantages of a symbiotic relationship between the beef and ethanol industries, and meteorologist Peter Levitt will be by with agricultural weather. The news today, USDA plans to appeal to federal judges' ruling that individual packers can test for mad cow disease. The FDA is investigating the discovery of melamine in livestock and fish feed produced in the U.S. Dave Dickey will be along with those and other stories. It's all on your Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Take a look at some of the commodity prices on the close today from Kansas City. Wheat for July finished up 3.25 at 5.04. September up 5 to 5.16.5. July wheat on the Board of Trade finished at 5.17, up 6.25. September up 7.25 to 5.32. And December up 7 to 5.43. July corn finished up 8 at 3.90.25. September up 6.75 on the close at 3.91.5, and December closed at 3.84.75. That was up 3.5 as well. Soybeans for July closed down 2 at 8.06.25. For August, down 2.25 at 8.13.5. November soybeans closed down 3/4 at 8.36.25. Soybean meal for July, 2.16.90 on the close, up 10. July oil up 15 at 35.71. Feeder cattle for August, 111.42.5, up 107.5. June live cattle closed up 45 at 91.15. Live cattle for August, 91.47.5 on the close, up 37.5. And lean hogs for June at 75.07.5, and they were down 20. On the close. And now let's bring in Dale Durkholz from AgriVisor in Bloomington to talk about some of the things that he saw on the board today. Dale, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jay.
And thanks for sitting in for Dan Zwicker. It's fill-in day today here on the Closing Market Report, I guess.
Hey, well, they're getting the better end of the deal out there in listener land.
Well, I don't know. Depends on what they're doing. Well, what was the major factor that you saw in some of the action today on the boards?
You know, the one thing I think that really kind of strikes me, and it's kind of what happened yesterday, too, was actually a part of what happened yesterday with the gains we had in the corn pit and the wheat pit, and even in the bean pits, but corn and wheat especially. We did some things yesterday by the close in the corn that actually seemed to bring the money crowd back into the grain pits once again, and I think the same thing is true of the wheat moving up to a new high of the move, and then actually taking out the last small interim high and closing over that. And I think that money game probably perpetuated itself in the market here today, as you saw right at the opening of the session here today. Corn, wheat, soybean prices, all three immediately started going higher and posting some nice gains early on in the session before settling back more of into a consolidation type trade. But even as prices weakened right ahead of the close, we saw corn, wheat go ahead and rally up off those late lows of the day there at that point. So it still looked like, you know, the money crowd was coming in and wanting to own grain at this point.
Mm-hmm. This being the last business day of the month, is that any kind of an impact on what was going on?
It might have had, you know, I relate back to what happened here right at the beginning of the month of May. We'd had grain prices generally go down right into the very beginning of April, only to have a rather good rally as we started the month of May. And that's a rally that actually continued, as we know, in the soybean market, as we're still sitting up here at the higher end of up near the highs of what we had during the month of May itself. But, you know, I think the money people, which they tend to look at markets from a trading standpoint, either early in the day, late in the day, or early in the month and the end of the month sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it looked to me like those people were really kind of interested in wanting to be a buyer before we got into the first of the month of June. So, you know, I think they were buying in some anticipation, and then you had enough weather uncertainty in the mix here the last couple of days that it really just kept any interested seller standing on the sideline watching the game unfold.
Soybeans had a little red there, down, in July, 2.25 for August, November, down 3/4. Was that more of an adjustment than anything that would send up any kind of other alarms?
I think that was really much a profit-taking thing more than anything else. And if you look at the November contract, it did poke out to a new contract high today but couldn't hold it. I don't know that that's anything that's really negative. It just said, you know, we'd run out of steam to the upside. But we had almost, you know, in the July contract, we've almost moved a dollar to the upside. It never was able to sustain the gains here early this morning, and it's got a contract high that's just overhead. So I have a suspicion when I look at beans that much of what we saw here today in that market was probably end-of-the-month profit-taking, maybe even some profit-taking in the short term because we got these technical numbers right over the market. Wheat and corn have been more of a, although in pretty big ranges, more of a choppy-type market over the course of the month of May. So we didn't have as much of that to play out as what we did in beans. And so I'd say, you know, you're probably right in the assessment. We just had some profit-taking in place.
What are you looking at tomorrow morning, then, as we start a new month?
That's going to be a tough one to look at here. You know, the trade's going to be turning around and wanting to take a look at the weather forecasts themselves. Here today we got a new 30-day outlook for the month of June itself that tends to be about normal in terms of temperatures for most of the Midwest, but still warm in the South. And we got some above-normal precip that's still in the southern plains and kind of drifts a little bit up into that southwestern edge of the Corn Belt. And otherwise, it's basically normal. But the trade's going to step back here a minute and probably take a pretty serious look at what the 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day, and those have been the discussion point of the trade here. They've, after being cool and damp late last week and over the weekend, they've seemingly taken a little bit more of a tilt into maybe a bit drier pattern and eventually into a warmer pattern in the Corn Belt, and that was the way the 8 to 14 days stuck out here today. So I think it's the weather that's still going to dominate and rule the affair as far as the trade is concerned.
Anything on the outside markets to look at? Everything finished pretty much up except for the dollar today.
Yeah, and the dollar really wasn't all that weak. You know, the market, you know, if there isn't anything else for in the realm of news, you know, you look at some of these outside markets sometime for some guidance. But they aren't showing anything really hugely negative. And I think that in itself at least keeps them from being a drag on the grain markets at this juncture. Middle of the week, there was some concern about some changes in China and their attempts to try to cool off their stock market, and might that maybe cool off grain prices a little bit, but that took a day to fly over. And I think right now something huge would have to happen in those outside markets to really have a driving force. And otherwise, I think, you know, they tend to still look neutral to maybe a little bit positive on a broad scale, and as long as that's in place, at least they aren't a drag on the grain pits.
Okay. Anything in livestock that's of interest to you today?
Well, livestock trade itself is really trying to figure out the direction of the grain market, you know, the last couple of days, and taking a big surge to the upside at this point. But in all fairness, in the short term, cash cattle prices probably are at about a low. So, you know, that's going to tend to mitigate some of the interest in really pressing the short side of cattle. And the hog market, small discount really to the cash index, but, you know, as we move into June, we move into the smallest number of hogs seasonally that we have coming to slaughter. So, you know, you just don't have any real downside pressure in the hog market, much like the cattle market. And I think that's the best thing you could say at this point. Otherwise, we've got futures that are really searching for direction, it looks to me like.
Mm-hmm. Dale, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good talking to you.
All right. Take care. That's Dale Dirkholtz from AgriVisor Services in Bloomington joining us on the Closing Market Reports today. Bottom of the hour, Peter Levitt will join us for an in-depth look at agricultural weather. We'll have agricultural news coming up in just a moment. First, a brief look at Mike Sola's forecast, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms during the evening, and then scattered showers overnight tonight. Lows ranging from 57 in northwestern Illinois to 64 in the south. And for tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy. Scattered showers, isolated thunderstorms, mainly in the afternoon. Highs from near 80 in far western Illinois to 88 in southeast Indiana. Tomorrow, wind speeds will peak at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Minimum relative humidity levels during the afternoon will range from 40% in eastern Indiana to 60% in western Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, USDA says it will appeal a federal judge's decision that allows individual packers to test their product for mad cow disease. That rule was set to go into effect this Friday, but USDA says it will challenge the ruling in appellate court, effectively delaying packer testing for BSE. USDA opposes the move by individual packers on the grounds that such a policy implies that only tested meat is safe. USDA's court filing is receiving heavy criticism from some groups who are not convinced that only older cattle carry BSE and who feel that consumers would be safer if all cattle were tested regardless of the cost. Cuba yesterday agreed to purchase $118 million in pork, soybeans, tomatoes, and other U.S. food products, and indicated the final total could reach $150 million. More than 200 U.S. food producers were in Havana last week. Last year, Cuba spent $570 million on U.S. food and agricultural products. South Korea says it has found two boxes of banned beef ribs in a larger shipment of U.S. beef. Seoul immediately suspended imports from the meat processing company that shipped the ribs. The ban will remain in place until an investigation is concluded. Earlier this week, South Korea's economic minister said the government will hold talks with the U.S. to allow imports of meat with bones. The FDA says it has found melamine in U.S.-produced livestock and fish feed. FDA Assistant Commissioner David Acheson.
FDA is alerting livestock and fish and shrimp feed manufacturers about a voluntary recall of feed ingredients by two companies. The first, Tembec of Toledo, Ohio, and the second, Uniscope, Inc. of Johnstown, Colorado. Two companies are taking this action because of several products they make have been found to contain melamine and melamine-related compounds.
According to FDA, the products in question, including AquaBond, AquaTech 2, and ExtraBond, are binding agents used to make pelleted feed for cattle, sheep, and goats, or fish and shrimp. FDA is advising recall of finished feed made from AquaBond or AquaTech 2, but not ExtraBond. Again, David Acheson.
This is based on the levels of melamine and melamine-related compounds in the initial ingredients. FDA estimated that the probable level of melamine and related compounds in the ExtraBond feed is being less than 50 parts per million based on the recommended mix rate of 2 to 4 pounds of the binding agent per ton of livestock feed.
FDA says it is continuing its investigation. Senators Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Byron Dorgan of North Dakota have reintroduced legislation that would lower the current $360,000 payment limit to $225,000 and close loopholes that allow some farmers to circumvent the rule. The measure has support in the Senate, but could face tough sledding in the House, where half of the members of the Agriculture Committee come from states that produce rice and or cotton. Meanwhile, former Senators Tom Daschle and Bob Dole released a joint farm bill proposal yesterday that focuses on renewable energy and conservation while cutting commodity programs. Dole says the 74-page blueprint eliminates direct payments while reformulates payments on an equitable marketing loan program and a partially decoupled countercyclical program.
It seems to us that the market prices as they are, I don't know what the corn price is today, but somewhere around $3.50, it was above $4. That's also raised wheat prices and soybean prices, that maybe we don't need that particular payment anymore.
Daschle and Dole say the changes would save about $9 billion annually. Roughly $4.3 billion would be reinvested in renewable energy and conservation. The plan calls for an EPA study on the feasibility of higher ethanol blends, and it would restructure the volumetric ethanol excise tax credit. Daschle says the credit, already under attack by livestock groups for fueling higher grain prices, could be targeted to boost ethanol from plant waste or cellulose while keeping a credit politically viable.
Do you need it when oil is the price it is today, and we're making the kind of return on investment that oftentimes we're able to make in the industry? And I would argue that it's an effort to try to maintain the kind of support that would lead us to argue that a variable VTEC makes a lot of sense.
The proposal also calls on Congress to establish a permanent disaster aid program. Two Brazilian companies are partnering with Monsanto to license genes that will help develop new transgenic sugarcane varieties. The deal gives Monsanto the right to license new cane genes developed by the Brazilian firms in the future. And new research from the Agricultural Research Service suggests that global warming over time could decrease soil quality. The ARS study reports that rising atmospheric carbon dioxide and air temperature may lead to an increase in plant production, but a gradual decline in soil carbon and nitrogen. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Well, last week, those attending the University of Illinois-sponsored Livestock Industry and Renewable Fuels Conference heard the beef industry could literally pair up with ethanol plants. Todd Gleason reports on the advantages of the symbiotic relationship.
One of the byproducts of a dry grind ethanol plant is distillers' dried grains. It's a cheap product, but expensive for the plant to dry down for longer-term storage. The experts in Nebraska say it's not necessary. Terry Kloppenstein is a University of Nebraska animal scientist. He explains how much the wet distillers' grains a feedlot cattle producer can add to aeration.
It's wet material, but we do our calculations on a dry basis, okay? Makes it confusing. And our cattle feeders get confused because they put it in the feed truck on a wet basis. And so they say, well, we're feeding 60 or 70%. Well, that's wet. Okay. So it's confusing. I'm talking on a dry basis now. We can feed 40 to 50% of the diet. So we can replace roughly half the corn in a feedlot diet with the wet distiller's grains.
There are a couple of things about using distiller's grains. The reason ethanol plants dry the stuff down is that it does not keep. In the wet form, Kloppenstein says it must be consumed within 5 to 6 days. There are some very good economic reasons for feedlot producers within range of an ethanol plant to give the alternative feed source a shot.
Oh, 100 miles is a reasonable number to consider. The thing is, if you're right next to the plant, there may be a $50 or $60 per animal advantage to feeding those byproducts because you don't have any transportation cost. If you're 100 miles away, that may go down to $20 per animal, but it's still $20 advantage, see? So it's a continuum, if you will. The farther you are, the less advantage.
He says that economic advantage that comes from proximity to the plant can cut both ways, and it does, at least at one small ethanol plant in Nebraska.
This is an operation that is built at a 30,000-head confinement feedlot. The confinement is necessary to get clean manure. I realize that's kind of an oxymoron, but we just don't want soil contamination because we're after the organic matter. It's the organic matter in the manure. What the cattle didn't digest is what goes into the anaerobic digester to produce methane gas. And so we need that manure that goes through the slatted floors. Okay, so we're producing methane gas, which is an energy source. It's gas that biogas goes into the boiler in the ethanol plant and serves as the source of energy for the ethanol plant.
The ethanol plant, of course, produces the wet distiller's grains as a byproduct, and those are in turn fed back to the cattle. One operation powers the other, and the two thrive better together than alone. An ethanol plant and a feedlot. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
And joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, how's the basis looking to you?
Well, looking stronger on the corn as we continue to move along here. We just kind of continue to see the corn basis firm up. And I think Todd and the group talked about this on Commodity Week last week there. Western Corn Belt is really firmed up a lot, and it's coming over, you know, working its way over to the east. And there's several reasons for that. I think you've got real high ocean freight, and of course, it's cheaper to get out of this country into Japan, out the Pacific Northwest there, and we've got a lot of corn going that way out of the Western Corn Belt because of that, and the new ethanol plants, of course, that have been built and all that's just kind of eventually helping us get our bases firmed up here.
Mm-hmm. What are farmers looking to sell out? Are they holding out for $4 on corn?
I'll tell you what we were doing today, a lot of us. We're back to the levels that we were back in February or right at those levels. And we're just kind of concentrating on trying to get caught up. Those that maybe didn't get quite as much sold back then as they wanted to, we're looking at adding two sales, getting some put options on and things like that.
Mm-hmm. What has processor demand been in your area?
Processor demand is, as now on corn again, mm-hmm. has continued to firm up along with the rest of the corn bases. River's been good. The processor's been firming. The corn continues to get better. The beans, on the other hand, there's just too many beans out here to continue to be right now, and the bean bases, you know, we'll have some times, a few days where it comes in and they need to get some beans bought, but then it kind of just goes right back out to where it was. So pretty weak yet on the soybean side of it.
Well, what are you looking for in your crystal ball tomorrow morning on the open?
I would say that we'll probably see some follow through to the upside tomorrow, but just like we've had the last couple days on the corn, I think it'll be real choppy. I think we could see trade both sides of the market, higher or lower, from unchanged. As we come into a new month, though, I would expect that we may see some new funds, as Dale was talking about earlier, come into the market here. We've gotten a pretty good rain up here, too, by the way, over the last two or three hours. Just a real nice, gentle downpour.
You guys out to the west of Champaign-Urbana have been hogging all the rain these last couple of times here.
Well, I don't know about that, but we'll take it, I guess.
As it comes. And what are your prices today?
Cash corn, $3.71. Beans, $7.71.
Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jay.
That's Bill Mayer from Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In a couple of minutes, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us, and we'll talk about agricultural weather. But first, an update on AM 580 News, and here's Jim Meadows.
Thank you, Jay. Illinois lawmakers are supposed to wrap up their work and adjourn today, but the state budget and other key issues are still up in the air. Democratic leaders can't agree on how much to spend or where to come up with the money. The Illinois House has passed a bare-bones budget, but the Senate and the governor are likely to object. Meanwhile, lawmakers are trying to negotiate an acceptable relief package for soaring electric rates. Both parties have been meeting off and on since last night with top utility officials on how to provide hundreds of millions of dollars of rate reductions and credits. Lawmakers say they're hoping the threat of rate freezes forces the utilities to increase their $500 million offer. The University of Illinois has raised $990 million through the first 4 years of its current capital fundraising campaign. That leaves the university with 4.5 years left to reach its $2.25 billion goal. U of I officials now say they're starting the second so-called public phase of their Brilliant Futures campaign. University President Joseph White emphasizes fundraising and revenue-generating academic programs to make up for lagging government funding. Urbana police and the Champaign County coroner are investigating the death of a 20-year-old University of Illinois student who fell from a fourth-floor apartment balcony yesterday morning. Coroner Dwayne Northrup says an autopsy found that Sung-il Sean Lim of Algonquin died of blunt trauma to his chest and abdomen. An inquest is planned but hasn't been scheduled. Bill Talamer has resigned as president of Lakeland College in Mattoon. College trustees accepted Talamer's resignation last night after just 11 months on the job. In a news release, Board of Trustees Chair Doris Reynolds said the past weeks have been a very difficult and trying time for everyone. The Mattoon Journal-Gazette newspaper reports Reynolds would not comment on a reported dispute between Talamer and the board. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Fasten your seatbelts. We're ready to go.
WILL takes you on a journey of discovery every day, but our engine can't run without your financial support. And the goal is to raise $2.1 million by June 30th.
Are we there yet?
The fuel gauge shows our tank is 76% full.
Help power the programs you value with a contribution online at willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455. Thanks.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. I'm Jay Pierce in for Todd Gleason, and joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Well, we're seeing some rain as Bill Mayer out in Lexington, Illinois, just told us, just a little northeast of Bloomington, and we see some out toward the western part of the state. How's the picture looking overall for some needed moisture?
Well, there's going to be quite a bit of it over the next few days. It'll be here and there. I don't think it'll be any general coverage on any one day, but I think it looks like we're going to see lots of activity between now through the weekend, unfortunately. And as usual, by the time Monday rolls around, it'll start to clear out. We do have this band of activity that you were discussing from north, northeast to south, southwest. Right on through central Illinois, and that's where those showers and thunderstorms are occurring now as that band shifts eastward. There will be other bands along in this very slow-moving weather pattern, which features a trough of low pressure up over the northern plains, which is drifting very slowly eastward. Several waves of activity are moving northeastward from the southern plains, northeastward up through the western and central Corn Belt regions, and that's the activity we're going to be seeing through most of this period. So, yep, we're going to get those showers, and they won't last for any appreciable length of time, but I think they'll be fairly common as we go through the next couple of days.
Have you had a look at the June 30-day outlook as of yet?
My feeling on the 30-day outlook is that we're going to just see more of the same. This pattern looks to be very stable. And generally speaking, patterns that have had the kind of persistence this pattern has had usually hang on through much of June. If there's a change, it's usually at the end of June and early in July. So I would say to look for maintaining a rather wet pattern in the western Corn Belt states, a little bit more activity than we've seen in the central Corn Belt, and the eastern Corn Belt will finally catch up with some moisture. Stays dry in the southeast. Looks like it'll dry out in the southern plains of Kansas.
Okay. So what the outlook looked like a week ago, a week into it, looks like it's still looking pretty accurate.
So far, I think that's right.
For that far out.
Right.
Any big problem areas to look at right now?
Well, for currently, they'd like to get it drier in the southern plains and get that wheat crop maturing under drier conditions so that when harvest comes around, they'll be able to go out there. They're losing some capability of getting that crop, in, especially in Kansas and further south. They'd like to see a little drier and warmer weather, but not hot weather, in the western plains. And, of course, you need a little bit moisture in the eastern Corn Belt. I think most of these things will probably happen over the next period. So we're not looking for unfavorable weather. We do not see any real heat in the forecast over the next few weeks. It looks like this pattern of normal to slightly below normal temperatures and maybe just a day or two interspersed in there with a warm day, but nothing that looks like sustained heat, that dreaded ridge that people worry about for drought conditions.
Peter, thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right. Peter Levitt, agriculture meteorologist, joining us on the Closing Market Report today. And that's our report. Jay Pearson for Todd Gleason. Don't forget that you can subscribe by podcast to this and other agricultural broadcasts. It's as easy as going to our website, willag.org.